John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, Sean Clayton.
Joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline is Sean Salisbury. And so, Sean, it's almost here. That last week of the preseason is almost going to be done. And, of course, I'll tell you what now. I have never seen a situation as bad as it is right now where the four-game exhibition season is totally outdated to a point there was five teams that pretty much elected not even to compete. I mean, guys like the Rams, they didn't play any of the – I mean, it's become a joke right now. I can't believe the Chicago Bears had 16 starters out. I guess that five-win season really gave them the confidence that they really don't need too much work.
Yeah, no, you know what, John, though, and I completely agree with what you're saying on that force and on that front, but I think you're going to see more of what the Bears and the Rams are doing in the future. I do. When you start to look, I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars, Marquise Lee, look what, and I know you get hurt in practice too. Don't misunderstand me. By the way, more injuries on the lower half are going to happen because of this tackle rule. I'll just tell you that. We'll get that. That's for another conversation. But I almost think I subscribe to the way the Bears and those guys are going about it, because in truth, you don't get very many looks in the preseason. They're only going to play a couple coverages. I'm speaking from an offensive standpoint to look at coverage. You're not going to have to. Nobody's showing much. I can control that in practice. I can get tons and tons and tons of reps. I think that third preseason game, which has become so important, I think year after year, to save bodies, not to show stuff, not to put them at risk, you're going to control the live stuff in practice that you can do, get enough reps so you can do teaching. You can't teach in the middle of a third down and a drop back other than film after it. I think you're going to see more and more because people show less and less in preseason. I think I subscribe to the Chicago Bears and Rams, and more teams are going to follow that formula that the third preseason game is even overrated, which will force the NFL to say nobody even cares about the final two. Should we get rid of two? But money-wise, that's going to be a problem for them because you know how owners are, John.
Yeah, that's true. But I think what it comes down to is I think you – and I know that Roger Goodell, who takes a lot of criticism, has been on this now for 3 years. And people think, okay, he's advocating trying to get the 18-game schedule. Well, this is a separate one. He said 3 years ago that four preseason games is too much. And naturally, he's not going to be allowed to change that unless he can come up with some formula that can replace the revenue. And I don't know if you can do that by expanding the playoffs to 16 games. That's probably – or 16 teams, that's not going to be enough. But I think what's pretty clear right now, particularly with what we saw this past weekend, that one, if you're a fan that has to be buying these tickets, you're not getting the full value, particularly if you're a Bears fan, did you really want to see 16 starters out, including a young quarterback? That's not good.
Yep, and you're paying the same price for a hot dog, same price for a beer, and the same price for a ticket that you would in game eight of the regular season. And one last thing to that, John, is like the fourth preseason game, even the third, as we said, it's to the point where it's irrelevant, because teams right now, and in truth, so people know this at home, and I think they do, 98% of rosters are set today. Mm-hmm. Very few guys by one performance in a preseason game playing 20 snaps in the fourth preseason game is going to make the roster. Unless there's some miracle or injury right now, 90+% 95 or more percent of these teams and coaches know exactly who's going to be on their roster. Miracles usually don't happen in the fourth preseason game, so it's useless, let alone the third one.
I do, but let's get started with four downs.
All right, gentlemen, along the lines of what you were just talking about, Jerry Jones told Shannon RJ on 105.3 The Fan that an 18-game season would lead to less injuries. I'll let you guys take a listen to this.
But there's a lot of detail to it, but it's very doable. And I think that, candidly, it's probably physically better for players than it is to have the longer preseason, the longer practicing. Our studies show that we actually have a ramped-up injury situation with players during preseason as opposed to the injury factor in the regular season.
Well, my thought is, and if he says that their numbers show, I guess you can't argue with analytics and facts if they're true. I haven't seen the numbers, but I do understand this point about Jerry, and I understand why the owners are pushing for it in that sense, as long as they're willing to pay players for 18 full games instead of 16 and you know, prorate that out to 16 games over 18 and less than their salaries. But for me that in the preseason, guys are a little more afraid to get hurt. They don't want to miss their season, so they tread a little more lightly. And when you don't go full speed and when you're only going partially or you're not real sure, hesitant players get hit. And in the regular season, by that time late in the season, we're not usually hesitant. Guys are flying around. That part I do agree with. I think guys are more apt to understanding because when you're thinking in preseason, new coverage, this is a new team, what am I supposed to do here, how hard do I go, what's the deal? You haven't. I think there's probably more attention to a detail later on, and you got a better chance to get hurt early. That part I do agree with. I still think it's going to be a tough pass, though.
Yeah, and the players aren't going to buy it. And I think that was a paid political announcement by owners trying to get more revenue as opposed to that. Because, hey, you can have your studies. You can take your studies either way. But, again, players aren't going to buy it because they realize the physical impact of having an 18-game season. And they get to, and again, it's not like you're going to take away the Thursday night games. We have that short week and all those different things. And so, no, I think that there's no way that they buy it. I mean, they realize if you're going to play 18 games, you risk more chances of getting injuries. And I know I track the injuries during the regular season. And that's something that I think 18 was, again, I'd like to see it myself because I'd rather see two extra regular season games than the preseason games. But, you know, players also realize these games you play at a high level and you have a high level of risk and you get the injuries to happen. You know, it's not going to sell. But again, that was a paid political announcement by Jerry Jones.
We've heard a lot about whether Carson Wentz will be ready to go week one or not. Sean, what's the latest on one of your favorites out there in Houston, Deshaun Watson?
Primed and ready. Now, I know he had 3 of 6 in his last preseason game. They think he's ready or they wouldn't only give him six throws in the preseason. And judging from everything that, you know, we won't know until he puts his foot in the ground and does all the things he does. But they've run him through the drills and he seems ready to go. It seems like he's a little bit farther along than Carson Wentz is, but everybody here is jacked up. They know that the season, quite frankly, hinges on his health. And if he's healthy and doing his thing, he will be an MVP candidate, and he will put points on the board regardless of who the weapons are, and that's how good he is. So all indications say fit, ready to go. He wasn't real sharp in his last preseason game, but I'm not sure too many people are worried about that. This is a different cat, and he's a special player, and as long as he's healthy, which he appears to be, he'll be set and ready to go game one, and he'll tee it up and hope he finishes a full season.
Thing I'm hearing out of the Eagles is probably going to be 1 or 2 games missed by Carson Wentz. I don't see him being available till probably week 3. That's just a timetable when you add that LCL surgery to go with the regular surgery, but then he'll come back and I think he's going to do very well. And if indeed what you're saying is true, I mean, you're looking right now that Houston is a team that's really going to be challenging Jacksonville as the teams to go against the New England Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers, because those are the top two teams. But if Watson is like he was last year and is like he could be this year, boy, Houston is in for a chance to really make a run and maybe be the fourth best team or third best team in the AFC.
All right, with all the recent departures of Kenny Britt, Jordan Matthews, and Eric Decker, the Patriots are set to start the season with Chris Hogan, Philip Dorsett, and Cordero Patterson as their starting receivers while Julian Edelman serves a 4-game suspension. Should they be concerned here, or will Bill Belichick pull a rabbit out of his hat somehow?
Bill will find a way, but more importantly, the dude who's under center maybe could take John and I in the slot and get us 60 catches. We wouldn't be as good as those guys. But I honestly, now depth becomes a problem, but Bill's always been able to find guys. And sometimes we think they're just a guy. 5 years ago, nobody on the planet knew who Chris Hogan was. Nobody. 5 years later, we've seen the guy make star plays and become a go-to guy for Brady in certain situations. They'll be fine. As long as they feel their depth is okay and that they've got guys they can go to and maybe a guy they cut they can go back and get if all of a sudden somebody turns an ankle. But it's the guy, the trigger puller. And Tom Brady's as good as, well, he's best ever. And he will be fine. He'll turn those, Patterson will play well. But these guys will play well, because 12 will put him in position to play well. It's called aim small, miss small. And when he throws to targets, he doesn't miss very often. I'm not worried about the receiving core as long as there's health. And when Edelman comes back, Brady, we've seen this movie. This is like the ninth movie we've seen with this situation. I'm not worried about it. As long as 12's healthy, the receivers will be fine.
And, of course, I mean, the reason is they've actually got a little bit of a history of kind of going with only three wide receivers. Now, Cordell Patterson, yep. I don't really count on because I think he's more special teams than anything else. Here's what they're going to do. They're going to run more two-back situations and throw the ball to the running backs. That's the something, because remember, they use about two running back situations more than just about any other team in the league. They're just going to flood the running backs in there until they get Edelman back, and then they can start to go back into the normal three-receiver set. I'd say they go to a two-tight-end offense, but then Dwayne Allen has been such a big disappointment, they really can't do that. So watch for the running backs to fill in for the wide receivers.
Yeah, and they'll change formations a lot, too, so they get they'll try to deploy their players in different ways. It may look different to us and two backs, but they can use those guys in so many different ways, and they'll learn how to be receivers from the running back position. We've seen this a lot of times with New England.
All right, switching gears here for the last question. College football kicking off this weekend. Nick Saban has still not named a starting quarterback between Jalen Hurts and Tui Tagovailoa for Alabama's season opener Saturday against Louisville. What do you think of this strategy?
I trust the coach because he's just like you would the guy in New England. You'll trust Saban because he knows what he's doing. I do not subscribe. I will say this, and I'll go on record to say this. If they do a steady diet of two quarterbacks and make sure that nobody's feelings get hurt. I've never known Nick Saban to care too much about feelings. I've known him to care about winning and doing it his way. He didn't care about Hurts' feelings in the national title game when he benched him. And had he not benched him, Hurts could not have made the throw that Tua Tagovailoa, that Tua made up in the hole for the touchdown. Hurts can't make that throw. That's not in his repertoire of skill set. He's a poised kid, runner, average passer. Tua gives you more explosiveness. Matter of fact, I think he's one of the Heisman Trophy favorites. If they use a two-quarterback system all year, they will not make the Final Four. That's just not. I hate it. Quarterbacks hate it. Eventually, feelings get hurt. They'll both play maybe early. They did this against USC when they beat him by 50 at Jerry Tough a couple years ago. They came in. They were supposed to start a veteran. Then Tua came in. I mean, not Tua, but Hurts came in, fumbled his first snap, and then stayed in the whole game. Nobody even thought he was going to play as a true freshman. Boom, takes the job, and they go on to win the whole thing. But Tua's the better player. Hurts is a little bit more poised. But I think eventually they'll settle on Tua because he spreads the field and can throw the ball in places that Hurts can't. But it's a nice luxury to have Hurts in the backing up. But they can't give me a steady diet. Once in a while, a changeup pitch, Nick will eventually settle on one, and I believe that one's going to be Tua. But they'll probably both see a few snaps in the game against Louisville, but there's no way Hurts gives you a better chance to win throwing the ball than Tua. That's why he won the national title.
One thing that we know, the decision's already made. Nick Saban's made the decision. Yep. He's not letting anybody know about it for strategic reasons because that's Nick Saban. I agree. I think Tua would be the better guy. I kind of get the feeling they may go with Hurst just because, you know, he gets the running game going. You'll probably want to have it simple to start the season. But ultimately, I think it has to be Tua. You go with the most talented guy. That's when you're true to your players and you're true to the school and you're true to winning. And Nick Saban wins more than anybody else in college football. But, of course, it's always a win when we get together with you, Sean. Hey, now, I'll talk to you later in the week, but let's hope to do Thursday as opposed to Friday because I got some network commitments. So let's do Thursday.
Count on it, brother. All good. We'll adjust to you. I appreciate you guys. Thanks.
All right. That's Sean Salisbury joining us in the Venue Kings Hotline. You can check out the show in the 710 Sports app driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we get the report card and grades. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. It's time for the Report Card with the Professor.
And, of course, the report card we do every day, and we kind of grade the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, all the things that are happening as far as what's going on with people and what they say, people and what they do. We'll take a coach and evaluate and give him a grade for something good that he does or something bad that he might say. So, Maura, what do we have?
Well, we're not quite done with Jerry Jones yet.
I'll give him a D for the preseason thing of 18 games and how the stats look good and how it's better for injuries and stuff like that. Okay, yeah. Fine. Yeah, good.
Well, I know, and I like. Sean was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, saying, well, if the numbers say that, but he said our numbers. I don't know who our is.
It's the paid political announcement by
exactly.
Owners trying to gain more money in the National Football League.
You have to know who's conducting the research.
I mean, these are the ones that the numbers said last year, they didn't for the previous 2 years, that you get more injuries coming off of a Sunday game to Thursday than you do. And, of course, I know doing these same injury reports, what they end up doing is not including the guys that get concussions and include them on the injury report because they, you know, They play if it's going to be Sunday, but they're not on a Thursday. They don't include those.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of that in his numbers. But he was also asked about what he would do to win another Super Bowl.
Well, we can do it right here. It would be embarrassing. It would be shocking if you knew the size of the check I would write if it guaranteed me a Super Bowl. And it would be obscene. There's nothing that I would do financially not to get a Super Bowl. So that's a given. That's a real given. The facts are that financial has not entered into it for a long period of time with the way our league is structured.
He actually said there's nothing I would do financially not to get a Super Bowl.
Right.
I think he meant to say nothing I wouldn't do to get a Super Bowl.
I mean, I think his intent is there, but he's going to get a D-plus from me, and here's the reason. I mean, if you've watched what teams do, Seattle, for example, you have a rookie quarterback in his rookie contract, third-round pick. You load up with Michael Bennett. You load up with Cliff Averill and as many guys as you can. If you have Jared Goff on a $7 million a year contract, you trade for Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters. You load up during that rookie contract. What have they done? They've shed more players than they've signed. I mean, they took all those experienced guys and big-money guys in the secondary and got rid of them, and all they have is guys in their rookie contracts. Yeah, they've paid the offensive line, and Jerry is always good at trying to pay, but he has not taken advantage of the 4 years that he has for Dak Prescott. This is year three. They've shed salary, not gained salary.
Well, the one thing they had going for him was that they finally talked, because, you know, I think Jerry interferes a lot. They finally talked him into being patient, and I'm sure he did not want to take an offensive lineman early in the draft.
I agree.
4 years in a row or whatever it was that they
did. He wanted Johnny Manziel.
They built that offensive line, and now those guys have been together for a few years, and they're starting to have injury problems. So, I mean, I think that was the main thing that they had going for them, other than, of course, Elliott and Prescott. And now that's starting to blow up, so it's not looking good.
Now, did they get a deal done with Marcus Lawrence? No, they have not. It's like, okay, you know, you need to put the money in when you have the rookie contract, because Dak's going to end up getting, you know, $25, $24 million a year, and deservedly so. And Jerry's not going to blink as far as being able to pay. But the other thing is, you know, they had so much money, $27 million a year in proration from trying to stay under the cap with those deals where you take base salary and replace it with signing bonus, and that puts them in an impediment. And so, do they put money in? No.
Well, speaking of, you know, dysfunction and maybe not running things properly, the Browns are back in our report card.
Uh-oh. There's a first. I take it this is not going to be an A.
Well, you know how their rookie cornerback Denzel Ward got hurt last week in the Eagles preseason game? He had back spasms. And Greg Williams took that opportunity to basically call him stupid. Said maybe he'll finally listen to me and stop doing those stupid things the way he's trying to tackle, and tackle the way I tell him to tackle, and he won't get hurt. It's about getting the guy to the ground. A lot of times what you do is cut the guy. He should have cut the guy at the time right there instead of a 290-pound man running over his face. That was via Mary Cabot of the Plain Dealer.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Hugh Jackson telling reporters Monday that Greg Williams can't do whatever he wants, and he doesn't think that he should say that stuff in the media.
Uh-huh.
So you have the... seems like Hugh Jackson has no control over his coaching staff.
Yeah, because, I mean, you saw Todd Haley challenge him in a meeting in the first Hard Knocks, saying, okay, why don't we play these guys? Why are we taking the easy way out and not challenging these guys to do it? And he goes, hey, I was an assistant coach like you have been, and I'm the one who's making the decisions on that. I have to look to the long term, not like the way you're looking. And so, yeah, there's a disharmony on that staff you can just see, and it's bubbled over, and this is like the good and the bad of Hard Knocks. It's great for me because, again, because we get to see that. But now you see disharmony, and that's not good. I mean, you see Todd Haley yelling at Greg Williams for hitting his quarterback, all those different things. And so I guess in this one, I think we have to give the Browns a D-.
Well, and to me, if you're going to be upset that one of your coaches is making things public and talking to the media, maybe don't tell the media that your coach shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
You should probably go just talk to Greg Williams and tell him to stop talking to the media
about
players.
That would be an idea, yeah. But apparently, let's put it this way. And I know Greg well, and I covered Todd Haley when he was a ball boy back with the Steelers. You can tell him, but they're not going to listen.
Yeah.
And they're not going to stop.
I think both those guys were kind of had that reputation coming in, right?
Yeah,
so it's again, an example of the Browns just being inept at putting together.
And I get criticized for saying that they're going to win five or less games. I mean, come on.
I mean, I had hopes for them this year. I think everybody thinks they finally have a pretty good quarterback. That, you know, if Josh Gordon is back and Jarvis Landry is a great receiver, you know, there's hope there, but it just, you realize that no matter what new coach they have, there's just this
ineptitude. I'm an AP. I voted them 30th best team in the league. I gave them a little bit of love. I mean, I put the Jets and the Bears and the Bills below them.
Oh, man. Well, last up here, we have Malcolm Jenkins is taking issue with the fact that the Eagles have a sign that reads Super Bowl champions and a picture of the Lombardi trophy hanging in their locker room. He says, I hate it personally. My focus is on adding another I to the end of that, and so it's great, but I'm well beyond celebrating last year's accomplishments because they don't mean anything this year. They don't get us anything.
Come on, Malcolm. Now, this is one where you're getting too many opinions. It's like, don't you celebrate something that the Eagle fans, the players, and everybody cherish, the accomplishments of the team? I mean, you know, this part of the Super Bowl hangover right now, it's like, oh, I don't want to look back at last year's trophy. I want to look at guess what? Your offense didn't score a point. First team offense in the preseason, not one point. You've got three key guys right now that are on the PUP list, and you got a little bit of a hangover right now from the Super Bowl, but it's like, enjoy it. This is an accomplishment. D minus to Malcolm Jenkins.
I can guarantee you if he was on the Patriots, Belichick would not have anything about last year.
Right.
They share that mentality, but I guess Doug Peterson wants to celebrate it a little.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, but I don't agree with that. Hey, coming up next, we're going to take your text question, so text us at 710-710. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
So, and it's a gorgeous day here at the VMAX. Seahawks getting their last big practice in for the Thursday game against the Oakland Raiders. A chance to be in the sun, but of course, kind of sad more because this is our last day to be here at the VMAX. It's all going to be closed to the media starting now, starting tomorrow. So, last chance to be here.
It is sad. It's such a beautiful facility, and I enjoy the insight that we get being out here. So
I'm just going to miss my walk because, again, that's like the only exercise I get a chance to do, to walk from the house over to here. So it's like I'm going to miss that. But in the meantime, we are taking your text questions at 710-710. Let's get going.
All right. Joe in Silverdale wants to know, with Beckham's new contract, do you see him Do you see him still giving the team trouble, or how do you think he'll be?
I think there's still that worry, but I think maybe to some, a certain degree, he's grown up a little bit. Yeah, he's going to have all kind of crazy stuff because he's Odell Beckham. He's a little bit of a diva, but again, most receivers are divas anyway, so that's not as big of a problem. But I think that what I think is most important is him accepting this type of a deal, because I thought that he would take the tact that's like, if you don't pay me like a quarterback, I'm not going to take this type of deal. I mean, he took a reasonable deal. The highest paid wide receiver was Antonio Brown at 17. He has the youth, all the experience, and he's the best young receiver in football. And so taking 18 shows me he was mature enough to be able to understand the business side of things and not try to go overboard and letting the ego get involved. I mean, he got a very fair deal. So I think that's a good sign. Is he going to have some blow-ups? Well, let's see. He has two games against Josh Norman, so you know that's going to be crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like that, two games against the Redskins cornerback, so you know that'll be kind of crazy. You know he'll do some different things. But no, I think he's grown up. And again, what I think he showed is like, all right, I want my money, and I think I deserve my money, but I'm going to come in here, I'm going to be a good soldier, I'm going to go and work everything in camp, and that's what he's done. And so I think maybe he is maturing, and I think he's going to be fine.
206 says, John, can the Seahawks acquire Dante Fowler from the Jags, and is Darba available for a trade?
They can acquire him, sure, and I guess maybe that would be one. Again, they're going to need some receiver help down there, particularly losing Marquise Lee. So, you know, but again, I wonder with Fowler, because again, he's in the last year of his contract because they didn't give him the 50-year option, where they just elected to kind of, you know, let him go at the end of the year. Yeah, he would be an option because I know that the Jets have inquired. He can offer some pass rush. I mean, the question is, can you get him for a fifth or a fourth round pick? You know, I don't think you want to. You can't spend a second because that second's already gone, and I think you can get him at a discount. But I just think that the Jags are loaded up. Problem is, if you need him for the opener, you can't have him for the opener. He's got the one game suspension, so you can only get 15 games of him. But no, I think he could be an option.
All right, the 425 says, Professor, who was your favorite sports broadcaster growing up?
I love Bob Prince, the old gunner. He always did this. It's like the old gunner, Bob Prince, the baseball announcer for the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, he was always my favorite because what he would do, and of course, I was able to watch this now being part of the media, is that he would have a bartender named Diz. Okay, and Diz would always make him screwdrivers. And so as you would get into extra inning games, he was outrageously funny because now he's had about, three, four screwdrivers in there. And, of course, he's always had that snort. It's like, oh, that, and the snort would come out and all that. It's like it was just fun to listen to him because, he was entertaining. I mean, he had the Roberto Clemente, arriba, 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 when he would try to hit a home run, all that fun stuff. So Bob Prince was my favorite.
Nice.
Beginner.
The 206 says, are the Seahawks done with Earl Thomas, or is Thomas done with the Seahawks?
I would take it the other way. I think the Thomas is done with the Seahawks. By not coming in, by absorbing all the fines. And again, he can try to justify the fines ultimately, if he loses $5 million by saying, I can get that back in my next contract. But I just get the feeling he doesn't want to be here. And, because KJ Wright's in the same spot, and he's here, and he even endured some knee injury problems to be able to do it. But I just think that he wants to move on. He went in the middle of the season or toward the end of the season yelling for the Cowboys to come get him and all that stuff. I just think he wants out.
425 says, if RG3 is cut, I want him on the Hawks. Who would you go for as a quarterback addition?
I'm thinking right now that they're okay with Alex Magoo. I mean, I think that, because the one thing is, RG3 is a great athlete. I think he can do some good things, and there is a chance he can get cut. That's true. But, I think they'd rather go with Magoo. I mean, a deal for RG3 is not going to cost much. I mean, that's going to be very economical. But I think they would rather have Magoo, or I think they'd rather have Austin Davis.
253 says, I would love to see the Seahawks have Carson and Penny on the field at the same time. With Russell, seems like a nightmare for defenses. What happened to old-fashioned I formations and split backs?
I mean, they wouldn't have one as the fullback, but no, I think they can do that, and I think they will do that. I think that's part of Brian Schottenheimer's plan, and so, the question's going to be, with Penny not having any preseason experience since the first preseason game, is he going to be up to speed to be the backup for the first game? That's why I think you may see a little bit more of C.J. Procise if he stays healthy in game one and maybe game two, and then they gradually be in there. But I would think that you're going to see times where you will see Penny and Carson in that backfield together.
I think this might be Howdy. JC, if you were a pizza topping, what would you be?
If I was a pizza topping, what would I be? I'm trying to think how I can get the database in there. I really can't do that. So, I'd have to think that, if I was a pizza topping, I was a mushroom and I was a pepperoni. So it's like, I guess I have to be, meat and maybe a little bit of an onion.
The layers?
The layers, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But the thing is, do I need to be a deep dish and have deep thinking as a deep dish?
Oh, see, you're really getting into this. All right.
Well, remember, I have to do this every morning.
Yeah. So it's like, the 360 says, during the draft, after Penny was drafted, did we ever find out what team called the Seahawks to acquire him?
Most people think it's the Patriots. We've not found out for a fact. But remember, they came back and they took Sonny Michel as a running back. And so I think maybe they liked Penny and wanted to see if they could move up a couple spots to be able to get him. So I think it was probably the Patriots.
Yeah, you would have to think they had some idea that Sonny Michel was going to have these knee issues that he's having right now.
Yeah,
so they
may. Because that was the critique. And again, it's like, Darius Geis had the problems off the field that kind of, made him a little bit, less valuable because he could have a first-round justification with him because of his talent. Unfortunately, he blew out his knee. By the way, Sony is back on the field today, so he is practicing.
360 says, is Brandon Marshall going to make this Seahawks roster? Some early projections are showing him not making it.
He's making it.
Making me nervous.
He's in. No, he's in. I mean, I think the six are set. I mean, it's going to be Marshall. Now, the question is going to be how they rotate them in. But, they've got, David Moore is definitely in. Jerron Brown is definitely in. And I think that just based on what we've seen the last 3 weeks, Marcus Johnson's in. So that means bad news for Stringfellow. You already see the McElvoy has been knocked out. And that means that Amari Darbo is probably going to be playing some place else.
I agree with you, but you don't think they're still hanging on to anything with the fact that he was a third rounder?
No. Now remember, it's
willing
like
to let that go.
No, it's like, is it a stat or who plays the best?
Yeah,
and you know who can help you the most? Because I mean, you've seen that the three young receivers can all play on special teams, and I know that Marcus Johnson said the other day that you know he was actually did some gunner work on punt team when he was with the Patriots, which is a really good value right now. So no, it's like that's the thing, because remember, this was one of the only teams in recent football history to have four third round draft choices. Okay, if one doesn't work out, let him go. And, you know, let's put it this way. They took him in the third round with a second round grade, but I think they feel better about this group right now. You know, David Moore was a seventh round pick, but now look how well he's playing. I mean, he came out of nowhere, and so that seventh rounder trumps the third rounder.
Yeah, well, not only we were talking about whether Brandon Marshall will be cut or not, not only has he just looked great, but he's been such a leader and taken so many of these young guys under his wing. I know Danny David Moore, were talking to Trey Flowers yesterday, and he's even helping. It's not like he's just helping receivers. He's helping the young quarterback.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 100%.
So that's really valuable as well.
Yeah.
The 360 wants to know, why did the Steelers trade for Switzer with such a deep receiver core?
Because special teams. I mean, what they did is they flopped a fifth-round pick for a sixth-round pick, and they wanted him to be the returner. So it was really not as much, because they are deep. I mean, James Washington, their draft choice, is a beast. You know, Juju Smith is really good, and they're the best team in football at drafting wide receivers. But what they wanted is that they wanted Switzer to be the return guy. That's why they got him.
The 509 says, Professor, I'm applying for a job with USA Today for their MBA wire and have to write a piece that's 300 words long on Manu Ginobili and another on why I fit with their team. Any advice?
Yeah, but what are you writing about Manu Ginobili? Didn't he just retire? I think, yeah.
It's maybe a retrospective?
Yeah, I guess it's like that. But I guess the big thing is make sure you get good access to him and talk to him and then find as many teammates as you can to kind of go over. And then, you know, you got to get the coach to be able to give you some good quotes, because you know he can do that.
Oh, yes.
Pops can tell you some tales.
You might not enjoy
but
you can get good quotes.
You can get some good quotes.
The 206 wants to know, John, if you had the first overall fantasy football draft pick, who would you take?
I would say Todd Gurley. I mean, because here's the concern I have about Le'Veon Bell, because I probably would have him if he was in camp. But you notice what happens to the two guys who came in late. You know, Roquan Smith has not played because he had a hamstring injury. Gee, what happened to Josh Gordon? He's got a hamstring injury. So what could happen to Le'Veon Bell? Might get a hamstring injury. So I think I'd go with Todd Gurley.
All right, that's it for Texas.
Okay, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we talk to Bob Stelton. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Proof done right.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And joining us now on this kind of misty-eyed day, because it's the final day that we're going to be allowed to be on the outside and watching practice.
Is it misty-eyed? Are we fighting back tears right now?
I'm fighting back tears, yeah. I definitely am, because, again, I like this stuff.
I mean, I do, too.
I'm going to miss my exercise and getting my walk over here. That's going to be, I mean, you can do your 2.5-hour workout. I don't have the unfortunate time to be able to do that.
John, nobody's going to stop you from walking over here. You can walk over here whenever you want.
Okay. Well,
and then just turn right around and walk back.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, might try to do that.
That'd take advantage of the weather.
Uh-huh.
See how the building's looking.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's great to be a neighbor and all that stuff. So it's like, I guess the big news yesterday was the fact that we find out KJ Wright needed a arthroscopic procedure, and it puts him in question, and Shaquem Griffin now may be the opening day starter as the weak side linebacker.
Exciting and troubling, I guess, right?
Yeah,
exciting
is.
Because we all love Shaquem, and everybody I know is rooting for the guy, and you're excited about his potential and all of that good stuff, but at the same time, he is a rookie, and you want your guys out there.
Right.
The defense is the more uncertain part of this team to me. I actually feel better after three games. I feel better about the offense.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little more confidence. I think to start the year, the offense will probably be bailing out the defense.
I agree.
Maybe eventually the defense steps up and takes over, because there's so many uncertainties. We don't know how it's going to go. But,
right. Yeah,
to start the year, I'm thinking the offense will be picking up the slack.
Yeah, and I think that's probably maybe what the expectation. But I think clearly, and you can watch it in practice and all that stuff, and it's not like the defense is behind, but I think the offense is ahead, because I think you can see the progress with the blocking. I mean, Jermaine Ifedi actually having one good preseason game. And I think you can see that the running backs all seem to be running pretty well. And obviously, when you have a quarterback like Russell Wilson, you know what you expect from him, and you expect that consistency that he's going to have.
Right. It's I mean, they look good. The running game looks like it could be there. The line looked actually really good in this last game, so I'm cautiously optimistic about that. I'm not gonna buy in because of one game, but it was good to see. It's you know, everybody will text and go, ah, it's preseason, who cares? Well, it's better than us talking about them stinking it up in preseason.
That's correct. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That actually means more if you're failing against a team that's not scheming against you, you got a big problem.
Well, what I thought was the most interesting thing, and clearly, I mean, there's some issues on defense, and they have to really kind of tighten some things up in that regard there. But I thought that, here's a Viking team that, because of the losses of this team, is now more talented than the Seahawks. But the Seahawks didn't back down, and they played the same level as the Vikings to a point where they had a 13-6 lead in the fourth quarter. And I thought that they played at that level. It's like, hey, they weren't backing down to this team.
No. And it was the backups that coughed it up.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I thought Danny O'Neill made a great point in talking about the opening drives of each one of these games. The number one defense has not stopped anybody on the opening drive.
Right.
Whether it's been a field goal or a touchdown. That a little problematic. Again, you're not scheming. You're not looking at tendencies or anything like that. So,
but of course, here's where I go with that. And again, it's who you play and when you play them, kind of using that old Chuck Knox type of phrase. But, I still remember that. I think this is actually 2013, the year that they had one of the greatest defenses in the history of the league. Mm-hmm. It was that kind of criticism, too. And what was the reason? They all played top quarterbacks. They played Peyton Manning. And so, look at the quarterbacks they played. They played Andrew Luck. They played Phillip Rivers. And they played Kirk Cousins with a very talented offense. And so, because I remember there was that criticism before that season, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's like they're just stuffing people because of how good the defense was.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not reading that much into the whole thing.
It's an
interesting point. It's interesting that, he's accurate. They haven't done much in terms of that number one defense stopping anybody, but is that going to be true in the regular season? That doesn't mean anything, because we see teams that go undefeated every year in preseason, or often will go undefeated, and then they stink it out loud, and they stink out loud in the regular season, or the reverse.
Yeah.
They struggle in preseason, then they light it up in the regular season.
Yeah, like so if we go with the preseason record right now, I mean, it'll be the Seahawks, the Falcons, and the Philadelphia Eagles drafting at the top of the draft, because all teams are 0-3.
Yeah, the defending Super Bowl champions are going to be 0-16 this year.
Yeah, exactly.
So, do you have any roster projections? Because I was talking to you about our buddy Brady Henderson wrote a piece projecting, just kind of.
I think the six receivers are set. I mean, because obviously you have the. He's got five.
Well, I'll give you his five. You tell me where you disagree. He's got Doug Baldwin,
Brandon Marshall,
Tyler Lockett, Jerron Brown, David Moore, Amara Darbo.
Yeah, no, I don't see it. Darbo's gone. And here's the reason I say that, because one of the things you have to take into effect is, okay, which of the receivers are going to be involved in special teams? Well, Brandon Marshall is not, but he's catching enough on the passes. I mean, he got a nice back shoulder pass here about 10 minutes ago that is like, you don't have to worry about that. And again, he gives you that big target that you can use in the red zone, and he's probably going to catch 40 or 50 passes. But again, what I watch, and of course, I make sure that I do this, I want to see who's on the kickoff coverage teams, and of course, who's going to be playing the special teams. And Jerron Brown is real good at that. He was out there doing that. They had Marcus Johnson coming in on the second unit on coverage teams, and he had been a gunner when he was with the. And again, it's going to be who's the best receiver, and what you're talking about, with Jerron Brown making it, David Moore, there's no way he doesn't make it, and you saw his return ability, you saw him on special teams. So those three guys are coming in with 4.4 speed, faster than Darbo. Mm-hmm. They've had production that Darbo has not had, as same as Brandon Marshall. So I think, and everybody's getting caught up, he's in the third round pick. Well, remember, no team in recent NFL history had 4 third-round picks. The Seahawks have 4, and one guy in the 7th round has passed Amara Darbo. So I think Darbo's gone. And I think they keep 6 because, again, you need them for special teams. Understand the changes this year involve the fact that you're not having big guys involved on kickoff coverage because, that's all changed. And
right.
So you need, guys that have either decent size and speed, and those are the three receivers that I think are going to contribute.
So they're going to. In your mind, they're going to keep 6 receivers.
6 and 5 running backs.
Darbo's out.
Yeah.
Marshall's in. Who's the 6th receiver?
Marcus Johnson.
Marcus Johnson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think, he made the one catch, and he's been catching. If you catch him in practice, he's really good at catching the ball. I mean, you can work him out of the slot fast. He's a 4-3 guy. Mm-hmm. So I think that Marcus makes it.
All right. And you said five backs?
Five backs, yeah.
Okay.
And here's my rationale on that, because, again, what this team has not had a running back that's been able to get more than seven starts in, like, 4 years. So it's like, so if you go with four, right? I mean, you already got two that are hurt, right? Because Penny's not able to play. He's practicing.
Yeah.
You know you got J.D. McKissick. I mean, he's hurt right now. So
right.
Unless you put him on an injured reserve list. But, again, I mean, the odds, and you saw it, Mike Davis hurt his ankle, and then he came back and played. But if you go with four, and the odds of this team getting two injured at one time are good.
Good.
So you
yep,
need five.
Yep. Yeah, makes sense. Yep. Makes sense. So who's going to be the toughest cut? Is there a player you look at and go, man, people are going to
cornerback.
They're going to be surprised when this guy's gone.
Yeah, I mean, it could be Maxwell, it could be Nico Thorpe, but it could be both.
Maxwell's interesting because yep. We haven't seen him play.
No.
Seemed unhappy with a contract that he signed.
Yeah.
It wasn't an old contract that he wanted renegotiated. Mm-hmm. It was a new one, not at the dollar amount that he wanted, I guess, but ultimately, nobody was beating down his door.
No.
It was the contract that he agreed to, and then he wasn't here during the mini camps and things like that. So there was
he just turned 30.
Yeah, it's been a weird thing with him.
And again, the way he played last year, he should make the team. Because
right.
He came in, 7 weeks left in the season. There was an injury to what Shaquille Griffin briefly. He goes out there and plays great. He plays pretty decent. Doesn't have a lot of speed. He's lost some speed. But I think that right now, I think that could be the one that could be
the biggest surprise.
The biggest surprise.
Wow. All right. Which backup quarterback?
I think it's going to be Alex Magoo.
Brady's got Austin Davis.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. I'm just going to keep tabs on how you guys do versus each other.
Yeah.
See who's going to be correct.
I think it's going to be Magoo because, again, it's like, okay, sure, he's raw, but this team did go in with Trevon Boykin, who was undrafted.
Yeah.
And, of course, you look at Magoo, he was terrible in the first series, and he completed 5 out of 14. But look at the plays he's able to make.
Yeah.
And I think there's good growth there. I mean, he's got an accurate arm. There's a lot of good things. Hey, so what's on Bob Gross and Tom today?
Well, it is Tuesday, so El Hombre will be with us at 1 o'clock. We'll talk to him. Who are we talking to from the team?
Barkevious Mingo.
Oh, he's good. He's good.
He's good?
He's a good interview. Yeah.
All right. What's one question you haven't had the chance to ask him that you'd like to have asked?
I asked it so you can ask it to reconfirm it. Is this the fastest group of pass rushers you've been around?
Okay. All right.
I'm kind of tipping off what his answer is going to be.
there wasn't a question you left the interview from. Oh, man, I wish I had time to ask that. I forgot to ask this.
Yeah, probably, but I can't remember it.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, so Barkevious and El Hombre will be with us.
Okay, so that's Bob Gross and Tom coming up next. Our thanks to Ashley Cox back at the studio. And, of course, to Maura Doley. And we'll be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.